your favorite cartoon characters will help you understand how drugs and alcohol can ruin your life. So watch the program. Talk about it with your family.
Make the right
everyone, welcome to Special Presentation with Mike and Ethan, or
Elf will not be seen tonight.
Well, we can't seem to get out of Down Under. Is there a Bermuda Triangle in the South Seas?
they call it the Australian Parallelogram.
Yes, well, don't worry, Mikey, under the light of the Southern Cross, anything can happen. Anyway, we talked about it when we watched Fatty Finn yesterday. So here is the other beloved Australian comic strip that I guess it probably actually runs in some places in America because it's still going. It's Ginger Meggs.
Yeah, they have a website, so it's still around.
Yes, and I was looking at the Ginger Meggs comic strip. I read about a month of back strips, and I was like, so you made a movie about this, huh? Really? Well, you couldn't get Bazooka Joe?
Sounds like you're not impressed by the strip.
It's very generic. And, I mean, I think any comic strip that has lasted this long probably is extremely generic and, you know, the kind of thing that nobody would complain about having in their paper because they don't notice it.
Yeah, I mean, that is the platonic ideal of a comic strip.
Ginger Meggs is very serial piece. And, yeah. You know, it didn't offend me, but it's just like, you know, I know you can do better than this, Australia. I've seen it. You can be funny. I saw young Einstein.
You're not a fan of Australia's favorite little battler?
Battler? Is that what he's called?
Well, on his website, that's what they say. Australia's favorite little battler. Also, Australia's oldest boy.
Oh, battler is in B-A-T-T-L-E-R?
Yes.
Okay, I thought you said battler like you were making a pun on butler? I'm like, what?
No.
Yeah, like, what, you mean like Alfred?
No, he battles, I guess.
Battles, yes, I guess. Yeah. I mean, honestly. So when we watched Fatty Finn, I likened it to a sort of Australian version of a Christmas Story. Now, this one is very similar, but it seems to take place in the 50s instead. And I don't know. Is there a movie that's like a Christmas Story, but for the 50s?
A Summer Story?
A Summer Story. Was that in the 50s?
I don't know, actually. I'm just guessing. The Wonder Years, I think, would be the, you know.
I thought that was the 60s. But
oh, was it?
Then again, my other thought is The Sandlot, but that's also the 60s.
Oh, I'm not sure. The boomers sort of, like, expanded throughout, like, a couple decades, so it's
yeah.
Kind of hard to distinguish.
There is a Leave It to Beaver movie, but I haven't seen it.
Oh, I have seen that one. That was the one that came out in the 90s, right?
Yes.
Yes, that one I remember being surprisingly good, but
really?
I was like 17 when I saw it.
Yeah.
You know,
were
you know,
a fan of Leave It to Beaver beforehand?
I was not, but you know how it is when you're 17, you're just really into like Leave It to Beaver type stuff.
Yeah.
Like, no, I remember seeing it with my grandmother and just being like going in thinking like, ah, whatever. This was a time when all of a sudden all these like high concept 50s sitcoms were getting movies. Because
yeah.
I think the Addams Family movie did really well, and so then all of them became movies.
Half of them with Brendan Fraser.
Oh, that's right. He was hot at the time. Like,
yeah.
He was a hot property.
He was George of the Jungle, and he was Dudley Do-Right.
Yeah. Now, the Leave It to Beaver movie, I remember rather enjoying at the time. I won't say it's high art. The basic storyline is that Beaver wants to like get a football or something, so he's got to like, you know, earn money. It's very similar to the story that we saw with Fatty Finn and Ginger Meggs. This is like the story that you tell when you about a little kid in the 50s or 30s or whenever.
Yeah, it's always about how children are penniless and have to scrimp and save.
Yeah.
I guess there's no story to be told about a rich kid except for Richie Rich.
Yeah. I think like the Leave It to Beaver movie probably, you know, had some, was bolstered by the fact that it was, you know, an American movie with a budget in the 90s. So, I it felt very brief, as opposed to Ginger Meggs, which is an hour and a half.
Yeah, and it was, we're recording this a little late because I had to cut into our recording time to watch it.
Yeah. And I don't feel like an hour and a half is absurdly long for a film, but it is absurdly long for this kind of film because there really not a lot happens. It is
not
pretty
a
much...
lot happens. Toward the end, I started actually getting invested, but you know, there was a lot of just nothing going on before that. And so Ginger Meggs, you probably guessed that it's a, that's about a little redheaded kid. And I don't think we used the word ginger in America until that, until the South Park episode that was specifically about slandering them.
Yeah. Usually when I've ever heard the term ginger, it's usually about like, you don't say ginger too much. We say redhead in America, don't we?
Yeah. And you know, we have, you know, not that we don't discriminate against them. We always say things like, I'd rather be dead than red in the head.
Oh, that's right. And yeah, then you beat him like a redheaded stepchild.
Yes. But then you hit puberty and it becomes all about how your life is going to change the day you sleep with a redhead.
That's true. I think like there's two kinds of redheads in American culture. And that is sexy ladies, you know, sexy spitfires who like
sexy
you
spitfires,
know,
sometimes missing their front teeth, but not always.
Yeah, yeah. They can be, they're usually, they can be, or actually, no. There's two kinds of sexy redheads. There's spitfires who like, you know, they're always like, they'll call you things like champ or kiddo kind of sarcastically. And they're very aggressive in bed. And then there's like girl next door redheads who you are more likely to have the missing teeth, but also have freckles and green eyes and be very Irish.
Yes, and Daisy Dukes and some, you know, you take this too far and you just get Pippi Longstocking. And, and then the third kind is Jessica Rabbit.
That's true. Yes. And then there's Jessica Rabbit as well. And then occasionally the other kind, if you have a boy redhead, generally he's going to be the school bully. He's very fat and stupid and has like just gigantic red afro. And is probably has a name like Bugs Meany or something, you know?
Yeah, that was what I drew. Okay, about a decade ago, maybe longer, there was, you know, 15 years ago. God, it's been a long time. Back when the Wii was a big deal, there was a game on the Wii called the Check Me Out Channel. And you know about Miis, right? Where you where Nintendo has you make a face that represents your own face in various games.
Yes,
The Check Me Out channel was where you could not only show off your Mii creations, but they would give you prompts, and then they would show you random ones, and you could upvote or downvote them. And one of them was the school bully. And so the version of the school bully that I made with the Mii channel was, in fact, you know, the redheaded school bully. I gave him a pompadour and a missing front tooth and a sort of, I was kind of thinking of Victor from Ren and Stimpy, but that wasn't what won. What won was a much more threatening looking face with a, you know, big jaw and deep set eyes and, hair almost, bangs that almost covered the eyes. And I guess that looks more like, you know, a grunge singer to me, but whatever.
Yeah. I guess there are various various archetypes of school bully, but I think definitely the redheaded one is a recurring motif in American culture, especially when it regards things like our versions of Ginger Meggs.
Yeah,
Now, Ginger Meggs, I think, is probably the comic strip. This is pretty much a palette swap of Fatty Finn, if you really think about it, I guess.
Yeah, it's not too different. And I feel like you could have told me that the one movie was Ginger Meggs and the other was Fatty Finn, and I would have believed you.
Yeah. The one thing I will say I'll say this about Ginger Meggs. At least he actually is Ginger, as opposed to Fatty Finn, who is not fat. So already Ginger Meggs is higher in my estimation. And, in general, although I didn't think that...
If he had been ginger and fat, then, it would be no contest.
Yeah. Then he would just be like, there you go. This film, it's very much like Fatty Finn, down to the style as well. Oh, actually, should we talk about the comic strip? Because you said you read some about it, so
yeah,
tell
I read
us about the
some
comic
of the comic.
Strip.
Let's see here. Here is a okay. Here, I'm going to read you today's Fatty Finn, or not Fatty Finn. Today's Ginger Meggs.
Well, we did say they're pretty much interchangeable. Yeah, so let's hear today's Ginger Meggs.
Yes, for the Ginger Meggs for June. We're recording this on June 12th, and we have Ginger and his balding father planting in a garden, and his father says, "In a few weeks, you'll notice this little fellow blooming nicely into a healthy new rose bush." And Ginger says, "That's actually pretty cool." And they stand and watch it for a single silent panel, and then he says, "Does it have a fast forward button?"
Oh, these kids today.
Yes. And in the middle of this, in the gutter between the second and third panel, is the message, "I live 3 days at a time."
I'm sorry, what?
"I live 3 days at a time." Because that's the weird thing about Ginger Meggs, at least as it stands today, is that each one has a sort of fortune cookie message hidden in it.
Okay.
So here, the previous day, the Sunday, has Ginger and his friend, who it doesn't identify by name, and they're playing Frisbee. And the friend says, "You better hide that Frisbee." "How come?" "Mr. C took it away because Fitzy's dad said he'd sue the school if it hurt him." And Ginger just whips the Frisbee at the dad and is like, "Oh, okay, well, didn't hurt the kid, I guess." Here, let me share this with you. Maybe you get it. I don't.
Okay. I'm trying. So let's see. So Ginger Meggs has to get rid of the Frisbee, and he's looking at. Okay. So Mr. C took it. Wait. You better get rid of that. Hide that Frisbee. How come? Mr. C took it away. Because Fitzy's dad said he'd sue the school if it hurt him. Mr. C took the Frisbee away.
The Frisbee that they have.
But Ginger Meggs has the Frisbee. And so then Ginger Meggs throws the Frisbee. And is he hitting Fitzy's dad or is that Mr. C? Because either way, it doesn't really make sense.
No. This whole comic seems temporally flawed.
This is, I'm sorry, Chatfield. This is not acceptable. This is some poor comics craftsmanship.
No.
The
art is nice.
Oh yeah, the art's fine. It reminds me a little bit of it kind of looks like Zits almost.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. It's a little sketchier, which is fine. It looks fine. The way they shade Ginger Meg's hair though, it keeps making me think he's wearing a yarmulke.
Yeah, he's not wearing a hat. He just has a very always in shade backside of his head. It's very puzzling.
What is the little fortune cookie on this in this inscrutable Ginger Meggs comic that we're reading?
It says, "Life is what's happening while you're scrolling TikTok."
Oh my God. They updated it for... I like that Ginger Meggs is a 100-year-old comic strip. They have updated it for the modern generation of old people.
Yep.
That is great.
Let's look at some of the other fortunes on June 10th. "Come on, hard work must have killed someone."
Okay, I kind of like that, but I still don't get why these fortunes are in Ginger Meg's.
Yeah, what are they for?
Like, is this a normal thing in Australia?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just an aspect of Ginger Meg's itself.
Huh.
Dentists are happiest when they're down in the mouth.
Oh, that's like a popsicle joke.
Yeah, they really do feel like popsicle jokes.
Well, I see what you're saying about Bazooka Joe.
Don't bite the hand that feeds you, unless the hand is made of bananas.
Yeah, okay, sure. You know what
it would have
like
been better
this...
if unless it's a hand of bananas. But
yeah, that would have been way better.
Yes.
Yeah, you just fixed the joke. You fixed Ginger Meg's.
Go a few back and you'll see his chubby mom in her pepperoni pizza dress. I kind of like her.
Yeah. God, it's funny watching them because it looks like his dad looks like Calvin's dad.
He does.
but
he looks like an older version of Calvin's dad.
He does. The mom looks like, I can't tell. She doesn't. I'm not sure if she looks like anyone in particular, but.
She's a redhead too. I wonder if her name is Ginger.
Oh, her name is Sarah, apparently.
Sarah. Oh, too bad.
Yeah. But I mean, her nickname's probably Ginger.
Ginger is usually a lady's name, right?
I assume Ginger is a nickname and that Ginger Meg's birth name is not Ginger, but I don't know that it's ever mentioned.
Aloysius Meg's or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's see. Let's talk about some of the other characters we've got in Ginger Meg's.
Ginger Meg's. Yes.
So according to this is, of course, the 2023 version of Ginger Meg you're talking about right now. So I feel like a lot of these characters have been added more recently than the movie, which came out in 1982, and much more recently than the strip debuted in like 1921. Yes. So we've got there's Benny Hooper, who is he is Ginger Meg's basically right hand man. He's like, you know, he's a kid. He wears like a newsie cap, and he's in the movie. He basically is kind of the right hand man. Otherwise, I assume he still plays that role in the comic strip. It mentions Fitzy here, who is apparently a teacher's pet. The copy here says Fitzy's full name is Cuthbert Fitzy Fitzclune.
He was in the movie. I remember him.
He's in the movie, yeah, but he plays a very different role in the movie, it seems.
Yeah, he's barely there in the movie, honestly.
Yeah, I'm a little confused about exactly what his role in the film is, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, it feels like they're like, oh, well, the fans are going to be demanding Clune Fitzgerald or whatever his name is. So.
Yeah, he kind of plays the same role in the movie that in Fatty Finn. There's that kind of foppish rich kid who isn't like bad, but is just kind of annoying, you know. And that's kind of Fitzy's role in the Ginger Meg's film.
Yeah.
Then there's Min, who is girl, and then the Ginger Meg's website seems to keep freezing my computer for reasons that I can't figure out. Thanks, Australia. The bytes and bits have to go all the way to Australia and back whenever I click on anything. So there's Min. She is girl. Let's see. Does it say the copy says Min is a she's a girly girl. She's soft-spoken but big-hearted redhead with a big crush on our lovable larrikin hero. Many an attempt at impressing Min in the face of being one-upped by Eddie Coogan has ended with Ginger upside down in a bin, or even worse, totally embarrassed in front of his mates. let's see. So that's Min. Anyway, and then there's some characters, like I said, I believe have been added more recently. There's Gloria Tudahope. Tootie Hope? I'm not sure. She is a girl of color, which is why I assume she was not in 1921. But she is the fastest, funniest, and most talented girl in school. Not only can Gloria claim to be the only one able to beat Ginger in a running race, she also has a very special musical talent for the violin. No one would know it, however, since she's the most modest kid in school. So I think she's kind of playing kind of the tomboy role, you know, one of the not like yeah. other girls.
Yeah. Don't, you know, don't underestimate you males. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay. Okay. So the kid who was throwing the Frisbee with is named Hooky.
Now, okay. Hooky, I think, was in the film. Let's see. What is Hooky's thing? Okay, so last but not least is Little Hooky. Hooky is like your friend's little brother that follows you around when you're trying to cause trouble and always tells your mom what you've been up to when you get back after dark. He's a bit of a tattletale, but it's only because he doesn't want to get the wooden spoon for lying.
The wooden spoon? Yeah, there's a lot of hitting going on in this world.
Well, I think back in 1921, that was probably, you know, pretty
yeah.
standard. In 2023, well, unfortunately, that's probably still very standard. We, you know, at least in America, they're still allowed to hit you in schools.
Yes.
But I don't know if it's what Australia does. Anyway, we also have, let's see, Penny Cheng.
Yeah.
Cheng. She is an Asian girl. And a very strong-minded young girl from the next town over with an IQ higher than Mount Everest and the wit to match. She has a record for the sickest burns to the sleazy approaches of Eddie Coogan and the biggest social media following of all the kids in school combined. Her single mother, a Malaysian immigrant who works as a family lawyer, has taught her that she could do anything in life that she wants if she applies herself. So far, it's paying off. She recently beat out Fitzy as the top of the class in the geography exam, though rivalry is slowly becoming a thing of legend.
Mm.
So...
Okay.
This is a comic with two teachers' pets.
Yeah, two teachers' pets and two immigrants who are better at than the local kids at everything. So a little bit of replacement theory going on here.
Oh no! Well, it is Australian, so I don't. Yeah. I'm not surprised. We also have actually, I think there is another character of color in this. And once again, the website is freezing, so I can't scroll down to see him.
Rahul, a part Sri Lankan, part Indian Aussie kid who is the only one Ginger will admit is better at batting when it comes to a game of backyard cricket. Rahul is a tall, lanky boy with a heart of gold and one of Ginger's more insightful mates. His mom and dad run the town medical practice and are very proud of their only son.
So I assume that probably these characters have been in Ginger Megs for a while at this point. They were probably added, yes. You know, in the 90s or early aughts when that sort of thing, a lot of older strips started updating for the new world and adding, you know.
They don't seem to have as many leftover elements from earlier artists as the others do. So, yeah,
it's probably a good thing. You know, the art style gives me, you know, like I said, there's a little bit of zits. It also reminds me a little bit of like the British Dennis the Menace, which...
Yes. They all have the eyeball style from Beano yeah. and Dandy.
I mean, especially when you look at
they all have the Sonic the Hedgehog yeah, eyes.
Especially when you look at the villains, they all look very Beano.
Yeah.
So let's see. I guess those are our heroes. Let's see. Who else do we have? The villains. We've got. I think there's Tiger Coogan or Tiger Kelly.
Tiger Kelly, yes. This character is in the movie, and he is very different than he appears here. He seems, in the comics, he seems to be, you know, a big mean boy. Whereas, well, we'll get to it in the movie, because it's actually one of the funniest parts.
It's funny, because the picture of him on the Ginger Meg's website says file photo for Tiger Kelly. So I'm not sure what that means.
But not for anyone else. What, does that mean that the character was, like, retired or something?
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on there, because the copy doesn't seem to offer anything right there. But then there's Eddie Coogan, who is, you know, the snooty rich kid. I do like that the way they draw him. He's got like a turtleneck and a blazer, so he's kind of got a Steve Jobs rich guy look.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, somebody take a picture of Eddie Coogan's silhouette forming the bite out of the apple in the Apple logo.
He looks very different in the film, but we'll get into that.
Yes.
And then there's Jug Ears Johnson, who is not in the movie.
Was he in the
movie? He is not in the movie.
I don't think so.
It's interesting that Because I get why they have a regular you would have, and they have a second bully, you know. But I guess because the only thing it mentions about him, Jug Ears is very, very big, and he's the most feared bully in school. But it doesn't say much else about him. I guess they were like, we don't need him in the film. I guess it's the same way that in The Simpsons they're like, hey, we got Nelson and we got Jimbo. So.
No.
Oh, that's a good point. That is a... So...
I mean, this movie is Jug this Ears movie Johnson. Is 40 years old, so they might have he might have been introduced see.
Actually,
after
and then
the movie.
The last villain we have...
Yeah, we're on the third artist, writer and artist since the movie. Lloyd Piper, who was drawing it when the movie came out, died in a car accident.
Well,
James Kemsley wrote and drew it from 84 to 2007.
That joke,
Jason Chatfield has been writing it since 2007.
What was that Frisbee joke? I don't know. I don't know what you're doing there. Also, like, we've got, like, there's a teacher here that... Mr. Kanehard.
I'm not sure if he was in the movie.
I don't think
or not.
So. Now there was the principal. I think was named Mr. Flogswell. So I feel like this is an update of the same character. Although the principal in the film doesn't seem particularly doesn't seem like much of a flog. Yeah, he seemed.
No,
very,
he was.
You know,
he was kind of a good guy.
He seemed very affable. But anyway,
more of an absent-minded
professor.
Although
he was dressed the same
else.
as the teacher in Fatty Finn. So now,
So once you graduate from school, you're not allowed to wear anything else.
Wondering if is that a thing that Australian teachers actually do or have done? Because my brother, like I said, went to Australia, and he told me that when he was down there. Like when he went to an Australian university, the professors still wore the big powdered wigs. Like that was still a thing they did down there.
Really?
Now I have not gone to investigate myself. So if we have any Australians listening, you can say whether or not that is true, but it makes me wonder if it's some.
Yes. Do teachers wear graduation caps and mortarboards? Does everybody? Are you wearing one?
Yeah,
send us
like,
pictures.
Everyone else. I think if you're educated in Australia, you're just very proud of the fact because you're among the 1%.
Yes.
It's like, look at me. I finished high school, and everyone's like, everyone and all the guys with everyone else is just wearing I don't know. They're doing Australia. Actually, you know what? I feel like they missed a really good opportunity in this film. To really Aussie it up, because the mortarboard should have like corks on strings hanging from it.
Oh.
Anyway.
Why is that a thing?
I think
why
it's supposed to keep flies out of your
strings?
Face.
Does it? Huh. Well, I'm going to have to start wearing something with corks hanging from strings.
Yeah.
Or
maybe,
these flies.
You know, maybe in Australia, that's a thing that, like, okay, I'm closing the Ginger Meg's website now because it is really, like, fucking up my computer.
Yeah, I can hear
what
it
is going
messing
on?
With the audio.
Ginger Meg's, what are you doing? Why are you doing this to me?
Anyway, So the Ginger Meg's comic strip is, you know, once again, you know, it kind of demonstrates how we sort of abuse ourselves with this podcast, because comic strips are so samey for the most part. We grew up in a time when things like Garfield and Calvin and Hobbes were, completely reviving the genre. But before that, it was just a whole century of slog.
Yeah.
I mean, no, is there any, you know, how many comic strips are there that people are nostalgic for from the 50s? You know, there's Peanuts, there's Pogo, and there's Little Abner, and how many others can you even name?
Like none. I do not think there's any other comic strip from that era that people. Well, I mean, Dennis the Menace, was that, you know?
Oh yeah, Dennis the Menace got started in the 50s, so yeah, I guess there's that. Not that anyone's nostalgic for them, but
no. I mean, it exists, and there was a Dennis the Menace movie.
Yeah.
I guess we'll have to watch that at some point.
I guess we will. Yes.
Right, but anyway,
anything with not Jack Lemmon, but the other guy.
Walter Matthau.
Walter Matthau, yes, Walter Matthau, the original voice of Homer Simpson.
Was he really?
No, but he was doing a Walter Matthau impression.
Oh, wow. I did not know that. Times sure have changed.
Yeah. He's lost the Walter Matthau sound since then.
Yeah. Okay. So now that we've looked at Ginger Meggs, the comic strip, let's talk about Ginger Meggs, the motion picture.
Ginger Meggs, the motion picture starts with a whole children's choir singing this kind of, you know, like circus theme song about how much they love Ginger Meggs. And, you know, when you have kids doing this, I kind of feel like it should feel like the kids all, you know, jumped into it spontaneously and they're really feeling it. And I don't feel it. It's like, no, kids aren't this enthusiastic for Ginger Meggs. They couldn't be.
No, this is like kind of like the start to Fatty Finn, where the theme song is really trying to convince you that you like, you know, this character. It's like, you know, it's that character. You know him. You love him. Come on. It's not really. It is also, though, sets the tone for the film, because it's got these, like, you know, the names of the actors appearing in like kind of like comic strip stars.
Yeah. In Stars, like, of David. That's weird.
Yeah. But it's kind of like, I saw that and I was like, oh, okay, it's going to be like Fatty Finn, where they're going to make it look like a comic strip world and everyone's going to be dressed like clowns. And it is.
Oh, boy, are they ever. Whoo!
Yeah, there's a lot of...
But as opposed to in Fatty Finn, everyone is dressed up as a white-faced clown, whereas in this one, they're dressed up as Augustes.
What's a goose?
Augustes are A-U-G-U-S-T-E. That is what you call a clown that is not necessarily made up, but is wearing ridiculous clothing so you know that they're a clown.
Oh,
What this movie reminded me of, and I had to look up what it was, what it's called. Actually, wait, I have to do it again because I forgot already. What's it called? Hawk Jones. Have you ever heard of the movie Hawk Jones?
I have not heard of this movie.
Hawk Jones is a 1986 crime thriller that has one unique gimmick that dominates it. It's a hard-boiled detective story with an all-kid cast.
What?
Yes. They almost play it straight for the most part, but then there are like little things like you're gonna meet me at midnight. No, 10. I have to go to bed before then. So
wow, things like that. So it's like it's kind of like the Terror of Tiny Town.
Yes, it really is.
Okay.
The slogan is the movie with the kids in it.
Well, that is accurate. It definitely has kids in it. Okay. So is it any good?
I haven't seen it. I just knew that the outfits that these kids wear really reminded me of Hawk Jones, especially the outfit that what's his name? The mean rich kid wears. He just always looks like he's, you know, like a mafia enforcer.
Oh, that's right. Eddie Coogan,
yeah.
Which is also not really a rich kid name. It's like, no. If you tell me, hey, there's a character named Eddie Coogan, it's like, well, clearly he's a goon, right? He's like,
yeah.
He's like a tough guy goon, right? No, he's the snooty rich kid. Okay.
Freaky deaky, Eddie Coogan's a freak in Australia!
Yeah, whenever he sees, he's always wearing like a Panama hat and like, yeah, he really does look like a mafia guy. As opposed to Fitzy, who dresses like Little Lord Fauntleroy. Actually,
but the weirdest outfit belongs to Tiger Kelly, who is pictured here on the website as a big mean boy with a single striped shirt like Charlie Brown. And in Ginger Meg's, he dresses like a used car salesman and is an adult man.
Yeah, he's got like this weird kind of plaid zoot suit and a bowler hat. He dresses exactly like the bully's dad in Fatty Finn.
Yeah, why is that?
It's odd. Like, I kind of just assumed, like, he was supposed to be he's a teenager that's always getting, you know, that in Fatty Finn, Ginger Meg's way. But I don't know if he is a teenager. How old is he supposed to be?
It's really kind of weird seeing this small child, about 11 years old, who has this sometimes violent rivalry with this adult man who sometimes knocks him down and hits him.
Yeah, and everyone just kind of... Well, there's a lot of odd things about this film, including that, like, soda shop that caters entirely to, like, children on dates and also employs children. It's like, okay... This is a film from 1982 set in the 1950s. I assume this Australia was having a similar love affair with the 50s as America was at this period.
They must have been.
Because
what was so great about their 50s? Ours was I like Ike and everybody gets to own a house, unless you, of course, you are a person of color.
Yeah, well, if I watch this, the best thing about the 50s in Australia is that apparently that you can go to a malt shop and get a whole banana split for a shilling, and you could win a radio on a game show. So other than that, we have, so character-wise in the film, we have our main guy, Ginger Meggs, we've got Tiger Kelly, who is now an adult. Min is in this, and she is a snooty rich girl in this.
I guess so. I don't remember. I couldn't find any strips with her, so I don't know what she's like there.
Yeah, but she's kind of like, I shouldn't say snooty rich girl. She's basically the girl from the house on the hill in this.
Yes.
And there's the thing, Eddie Coogan wants to date her because he's also rich, but she's got, you know, she's kind of got eyes for this hard scrabble bruiser Ginger Meggs, and so there's that rivalry.
I just can't get behind the idea of, you know, 11 and 12 year olds dating. Is like what's their intention here? I mean, is Eddie Coogan thinking, all right, I'm gonna strike out tonight, kaboom?
I mean, I guess I don't know if kids date at that age. I think not.
I think if you're dating at that age, you're probably being set up by your parents because they want to merge farms.
Yeah. Like, I imagine that there's kids at that age who are like, now we're boyfriend and girlfriend, but it's more of just a, we say we're this thing and we're kind of play acting at it, at being adults. You know? But
it's, a sort of LARPing playing house.
Yes. And maybe that's what's happening here. I mean, Ginger Meg seems very serious about this relationship, though, because he's taken her to movies. He's taken her to get malts. He's giving up fighting for her.
I was hoping that at the end, when he's, you know, again, just like Fatty Finn, it ends with him earning enough money to buy something and then not needing to buy it. But I was really hoping he'd be like, I bought you a ring. Will you be my wife? And we cut to like the 12-year-old wedding.
It'd be like,
our gifts are registered at Toys R Us.
Well, you know, it's one of those things is like, oh, no, child bride. It's OK. She's getting married to a child groom. Oh, OK. Well, I guess that's fine then. oh, my God. This movie is, I'll say this, I actually found it slightly more interesting than Fatty Finn.
I think it took a while for that, but I came to that conclusion too.
Yeah, but I can't really say why.
I feel that it, this was better directed. I feel that there are certain, you know, you've talked about the idea of vibes movies, and this, this is not a vibes movie, but it has a, it has some vibes when it needs to. And I think that this actually gives you a sense of, you know, of suspense in certain places. There are significantly funny sequences, but it's not just about laughs, which is strange because it's based on a comic strip. Why would it not be just for laughs?
Yeah, there's a lot of plot lines in this film, all things considered.
It just goes, and it really just goes on and on and on. It did not need to be an hour and 37 minutes.
Yeah, because it's basically like the A plot is Ginger Meggs wants to date Min, but Eddie Coogan is in his way, so they're constantly bickering. The B plot is he's giving up fighting for Min. The C plot is someone steals his pet monkey. The D plot is he needs to get a radio for his mom. And then it just goes on. There's so much stuff happening. And then there's Tiger Kelly is in there too fighting. And I don't know why he's fighting with Tiger Kelly, because at least with Eddie Coogan, they're fighting over a girl. Tiger Kelly, it just seems that, like, I don't know. They just don't like each other, I guess.
Yeah, I don't. We don't get any kind of conclusion for Ginger versus Tiger. They're just gonna fight forever, like Popeye and Bluto.
I do think Tiger Kelly is. I like him more than the bully in Fatty Finn, because the Fatty Finn bully, they're basically the same character. But in Fatty Finn, I feel like it was like, well, I feel just bad for this guy because he's kind of, you know, he's got a lot to lose, whereas Tiger Kelly is like, okay, he's a sort of villain that you can just be like, okay, we love to hate him. But
yeah, Tiger Kelly is a whole lot funnier because he's this adult man who is constantly not only getting shown up by this child, but will do anything to show the child up in reverse. Like, ha, I'll show you how a man smokes a cigar. It's like, what? Yeah, why would you want to show a child that?
This guy, the guy that plays Tiger Kelly in this does have some good comedy chops. The way, like, he, like, whenever he dumps, like, lettuce on Ginger Meg's head and then kind of just, like, saunters away with this kind of, this very self-satisfied walk.
And I dumped lettuce on you, how about that?
And plus, I like when he's in the movie theater and they're all watching, like, some, you know, silent film, and his girlfriend puts her arm around him and he gets all excited, and then it looks like they're going to make out and he just steals her ice cream.
I didn't like, realize that was Tiger at first. You're right. That is good.
That was pretty amusing. So, and then I do like when there's a scene where I forget Ginger Meggs is doing something and Tiger Kelly shows up pretending to be a blind man. So in disguise. It's just like, why? He's really putting a lot of effort into this. And then what, he wants to steal his radio or something? But, like, I don't know. There's a lot happening here.
Yeah, I can't say that I was watching every minute. But one thing I really like is that the kids all go to see this. It's not a silent movie. It's like a black and white movie being shown at the town hall. And when the movie ends, they all jump from their seats and go, yay, like school's out. Wow, they hated that movie.
Man, I guess that's how you watch movies in Australia in the 50s. They would just, you know, set up a projector in the town hall and be like, hey, come on down. We're going to see a moving picture.
I mean, you know, I guess I didn't quite jump to my feet and go, yay, when I watched Rise of the Beasts today. But it was pretty good. So maybe I should try doing that when I enjoy a movie. Just run out and be like, yay, I saw a movie.
Well, you know, sometimes, have you ever been in a movie when people clap at the end?
Yes. Usually for a movie that's like really blatant Oscar bait, like Forrest Gump or whatever.
Oh, yeah, they would.
I think people clapped at the end of Mr. Holland's Opus.
They would. That is definitely a movie that would make people clap. I'm sure I've been in a few. I think I've seen a few, like, you know, like midnight showings, like Labyrinth, where people would clap at the end.
Yeah.
But that's a, I think that's a special thing where it's like, hey, we all know what this film is. We're all here because, you know, we grew up with it. So, you know,
I don't have a problem with clapping at movies. Some people do. They're like, hey, they can't hear you. Yeah, so what? You can. What are you afraid of clapping?
some people just hate fun. I forgot. So we mentioned some of the plots in this film. They keep introducing plots all the way through this film.
Yeah, they do.
Like in the final reel when suddenly it's like, oh yeah, there's a cat burglar in town. There is? Okay.
They introduce a pirate for a villain. Okay.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's incredible. Like in the last 10 minutes, there's like a pirate who shows up. Then the circus is in town. And then like, oh, and we forgot there's another plot line where Ginger Meggs has to play Romeo in the school play.
Yeah. It's well, thankfully they're just doing the balcony scene, you know, good news that he didn't have to play Romeo all through the thing, because the rest of it is just, kids doing a pageant for their captive parents.
Yes.
We've talked about this before, the media concept of the school play pageant. You know, there's like three kinds, and this is two of them. One is when it's the pageant and your kid is dressed up as, like, I don't know, Nightfall itself, and comes over it's like, I am Nightfall, everyone close your eyes, that kind of thing. And the other kind is Romeo and Juliet. And the third kind is when you have kids dressed up to give a presentation about, like, how an ice cube becomes water and then steam.
Yes.
And you still have a whole bunch of kids' parents attending in like black tie only and throwing a bouquet to the kid playing steam.
I remember attending quite a few of these events when I was younger, you know, because, you know, either a sibling was in, you know, one of these shows.
Mm.
And you know how it is. It's basically like, okay, look, we need to get the parents in here so that they'll like buy popcorn, overpriced popcorn. So every child in the entire grade is going to be in this pageant. And and that's why they're like, I am Nightfall. Oh yeah, thanks for that. Was obviously a role just made up to like get someone on stage.
I love how that they actually threw that into one of the Mario games. In one of the Mario RPGs, in between like adventures, you meet back up with Luigi, who is on his own adventure. And he says, I found my way to this town of, where there was a big acting display on, and I got hired to be part of a play, but I had to play grass just as I wear green. but then I came out the back doors and there are so many people clapping and cheering for me, cheering for grass.
Everybody loves grass.
Yeah.
Nobody rides for free.
And the director is right there with him. Is like, Luigi is the greatest actor I've ever seen. We're going to take it on tour. And of course, Luigi will be grass.
You know, when I was in third grade, I was in a school play very much like that. I played a flower in the immortal Japanese folktale Tetsuo the Iron Man or something.
Was it the tongue cut sparrow?
I think it was. Oh, no. I did tongue cut sparrow, too. I told you about that, didn't I?
Yeah.
Where I played a birdcage.
You played a birdcage?
I played a birdcage. Oh, man, I was so good. I improvised a hilarious line in it because the old man, the guy playing the old man comes in and he's like, where's my sparrow? And I and another kid were playing the birdcage. And I was like, why don't you come in and look for him? So the guy comes to the birdcage and looks around and he's like, there's no tongue cut sparrow here. In the play, it was like something about a woodcutter or a stonecutter, I forget. But I was a flower, and I had one line. My line was like, please water us.
Oh, I'm a thirsty little flower. You have to water me. You have to use your pee.
He's like, I'm so thirsty for kill. I was the horniest flower. please, just do it. Will you enter the wizard's forest of piss?
You pass through the garden unimpeded.
Anyway, so school plays. Fatty Finn was, I'm sorry, Ginger Megs is in the school play.
Ginger Finn, Fatty Megs.
Oh my God. So that is another plot that is going on. It is funny at the end when Ginger Megs is like, I'm going to the circus. And then immediately after, I need to get to school to be Romeo in this play.
I was like, that's stupid. Then I remember that I was late to do this because I was seeing a movie. So yeah, you can overplan for a day.
I mean, I suppose there's a lot going on here. At one point, like, Ginger Megs captures like a burglar, and I thought it was the cat burglar, but it's not. It's a different guy.
It's a different burglar. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just some random purse snatcher. And it's like, well, here's your reward, 5 shillings. And he's like, oh, core blimey. Now I'm halfway to getting 10 shillings, which I need to give a reward for my lost monkey. And it's like, well, I'm glad you just wrote that in to explain how he gets half of the money he needs, I guess.
But he needed 10 pounds. And I think pounds are bigger than shillings.
Oh, are they? Oh, I don't know how Australian money works. Sounds very confusing.
I don't know. I was about to say they're on the euro now, right? No, they wouldn't be.
They're on the Aussie. Yeah, they actually, they're very much like the euro, and the entire continent has coordinated having a single currency.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
Yeah, all of Australia uses the same currency.
Oh, okay. That's good. I mean, No. We're not the whole continent. People get really mad when America claims to be the whole continent of North America.
Oh, is there other countries here?
A couple. They're too small to mention.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm sure we don't have any listeners in those countries, so it doesn't really matter, you know. It's not like, what are you listening to us on, a Mexican radio right now? Whoa. Well, eating some barbecued iguana.
Watch this video is going to kill your star.
Oh, I heard him first on the wireless back in 52. But anyway, so Ginger Megs. What else do we have to say about Ginger Megs? Oh,
he runs away with a bindle over his shoulder. I mean,
oh, that's right. Why does he run away from home in this?
He runs away from home because, like, he invited his friends into his house and they broke a bunch of plates or something?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff happening, so it's kind of hard to remember which shenanigan caused him to run away from home.
Yeah. Because I mean, we weren't paying that much attention, but you know what? They could have made a better movie, so that's on them.
Yeah. was it because of the...
The drag birthday party.
Oh, that's right. The drag birthday party. do you want to explain this to the listeners?
Okay. So Ginger Megs promised his would-be girlfriend that he'll give up fighting for her. And that's when Eddie Coogan goads him into knocking him flat with one punch. And Minnie is like... Minnie is like, I can't believe you broke your promise. You are disinvited from my birthday party. So Eddie Coogan is invited to the birthday party instead. And somehow Ginger gets it into his head to dress up as a girl and take one of his friends also dressed up as a girl and attend the party in disguise. And he's like, you know, I guess this is a big enough party that nobody is expected to know everybody else.
Yeah.
And Ginger overhears Eddie bad-mouthing him and starts trying to defend Ginger, who I totally aren't myself, is a good boy. And then eventually, again, he loses his temper and knocks Eddie flat on the ground. And there is absolute pandemonium and two boys in dresses running away. And now, this is what I want to talk about with this more than anything. The one thing that makes this a whole lot better than Fatty Finn is the rock songs.
Oh my god, yes. What is up with that?
Yeah, there is some freaking kick-ass rock and punk music in the background. And it was all written for the movie. This scene, the drag birthday party scene, is actually accompanied by a song about I've never worn women's clothes before.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is a handy song. You can use this in a lot of occasions.
And the chorus is literally like something like, let's go to a party.
Yeah.
And then let's do it in drag, I think they say. So it's like they're just narrating what's on the screen.
It sort of feels like the original Toy Story where they had songs that were clearly intended to be sung by the main characters, but they just had the songwriter sing them on the soundtrack instead.
Yeah, yeah. It is funny because this film, it's like, it takes place in the 1950s, so you kind of expect, you know, 1950s music. And
yeah,
that first song in the opening credits is kind of the sort of music that you're expecting. But then once you get into the actual movie, it's like this fucking banging acid rock.
Yeah.
What?
I got up and pogoed. Honestly, yeah.
Half the songs sound like they were made by Heart. So yeah. Like Ginger Meg's on screen. I just hear like, he's a magic man, mama.
It's, yeah. Like,
it's actually, yeah, they're all bangers. It's
yeah.
Very
I kept
good.
thinking of the song from House. You know that cherries were made for eating and fish were made to swim in the sea.
Yeah, God, it really it does elevate the material a lot, though.
It's weirdly the rock songs carry the movie, and it's weird that the rock songs were the part that everyone was like, no, this has no place in Ginger Meg's.
I mean, it is incongruous because it's very weird to see them in this film, right? It's like,
yeah,
you know, it's not what you would expect. You would expect very much like, I mean, not like doo-wop-y type music, but, you know, like, kind of like...
Yeah, something a little more like, you know, Mr. Sandman.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's odd to see a movie that just is like... It's like watching A Knight's Tale, but it is, you know, it's definitely...
Pretty cut now.
Yeah, it's definitely like much... It's much more watchable when it's got this good music.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, like we said, a lot of stuff is going on, and it's hard to keep track because, like Eddie Coogan, there's the drag birthday party and this exploding camera gag.
Yeah,
that happens.
The exploding camera gag, the exploding cigar that Tiger grabs away from him so he can like show off what a good cigar smoker he is.
Well, I mean, that part is kind of funny because it implies that Eddie Coogan was trying to trick Ginger Meggs into smoking the cigar so that would happen, but that didn't work out right. So it's kind of a good gag setup. But it is odd that Tiger Kelly is all like, yeah, I'm going to show you how a man smokes a cigar. And everyone's like, that. Look at this guy beating up a small child. That is the coolest man ever. He's cooler than a third grader.
Yeah, it reminds me of what the inspiration apparently was for Comic Book Guy on The Simpsons.
Mm-hmm.
Was that Matt Groening witnessed somebody who Comic Book Guy is kind of a caricature of, who he says was eating this enormous styrofoam tray of fried clams and arguing intensely with 10-year-olds over superhero continuity as if they were his equals.
It's funny that Comic Book Guy is based on one specific real person because
we
have all met Comic Book Guy.
Yes.
I mean,
we have all met Comic Book Guy. Some of us have been Comic Book Guy.
Yeah. So Tiger Kelly is basically the Australian version of a Comic Book Guy. Now, let's see. Also, late in the movie, Ginger Meggs runs away from home. He meets this kid named Alex who works for the circus. And, I guess he rides a unicycle in the circus, and then the circus comes to town, and this is, that's where that we see the pirate that stole his monkey. Gotta say, Alex is the prettiest man.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I was like, are they gonna fall in love? It really felt kind of coded like that.
It really did. Like, they have this cute meet where they're fishing, and then Ginger Meggs is really playing up Alex. Like, the circus coming to town, you gotta see Alex, he's gonna ride a bicycle, it's amazing! And he really wants everyone to meet his friend Alex. And yes. Then Alex
we'll
is
be
like...
married in June.
Yeah, and then when Alex shows up, he's like, he's wearing, like, you know, his performer's outfit, which includes, like, a sports bra, almost. I guess it's supposed to be like a genie vest, but it's really cut to look like a sports bra. And I don't know if Alex is wearing makeup or not, but he is so pretty. He's so pretty when he shows up. I'm just like, I was just like looking at him being like, oh, I'm getting a little fluttery looking at this beautiful Tom Cruise-like figure. He rides a unicycle on a tightrope, and his mom is a palmist, I think, in the circus.
Yeah, his mom was like a fortune teller, and she's got like a Siamese cat and a dog they carry around everywhere.
Yeah, and so this is where Ginger Meggs finally finds out that, like, who's this evil pirate has his monkey. And
when the pirate shows up, I was like, Jack Black!
Oh, yeah, that is a very Jack Black character.
And he is just absolutely eating the scenery. I love him.
Yeah. I was actually kind of wondering if he had a real hook hand for a little while.
Yeah, it gets pulled off. But I don't remember if we actually see the hand underneath or not.
We do. Because I was actually thinking, like, look, he's clearly playing a pirate persona because he's a circus performer, but is he actually supposed to have a hook hand? And I actually thought that would be funny if he did, but no, it gets pulled off and you see that he's got a normal hand made out of flesh.
I guess it's good that it's not a real hook, because you see him grab Ginger and threaten him by tracing a circle around his eye with his hook.
Yeah. This pirate means business. Now, it's funny because at the very end, after Ginger Meggs thwarts the villains and everything, he comes back to buy his monkey, and the mom is just like, the monkey went off. The circus already left town, sorry. Ginger's just like, win some, lose some. And it's just like, really?
I guess the money he got for you know, returning the diamonds was consolation enough.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Because the cat burglar, he catches the cat burglar. It turns out it's
a cat burglar
who
hit all the rich people in town. And to our surprise, it's the Flying Foxes, which the Flying Foxes are mentioned in the song. There's a song about we're going to the circus, Min, Benny and me. And it's like, it's so specific. They really wanted this to be a musical, and maybe it was written so that they could actually redo it as a stage musical if they wanted.
Oh, actually that would make sense. Now the Flying Foxes. So he basically, they've been sewing the diamonds into their leotards. So that is, you know, hiding in plain sight. But Ginger Meggs thwarts them.
These are not literal flying foxes. These are gymnasts.
That's right. They're like
acrobats.
Like trapeze artists.
I've never heard them called flying foxes before, so I'm not sure if that's like just the Australianism for trapeze artists, or if it's their copyright.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe Australia does have actual flying foxes, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think so. I mean, they have fruit bats, right? Bats are the only non-marsupial mammals they have.
Oh, I didn't. Oh, really? Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. I did not know that.
Apart from, rabbits and mice that came over. But
I never thought about it, but you're right, because they do have bats there, and bats are not marsupial. So I learned something. Ginger Meggs, sorry, it's funny because he pretty much just gives up once he spent the whole movie chasing this monkey and going through everything, but they're like, oh, the circus left. He's like, that's it. But then Alex has turned out, like, Alex is in a tree and is like, hey, I got your monkey here. Turns out when, like, I found
yeah, I found his clothes in the pirate's dressing room, and that proved that he belonged to you because your name was sewed into them or something. And
yeah, and the pirates like gave up and just gave him monkey.
Yeah, over. It's really nice when somebody else solves the plot for you.
Yeah, and it's funny because he's just like, "So I got your monkey," and Ginger Meg's like, "Cool," and the movie just ends.
Yeah.
Just ends. There's no denouement. So,
well, I mean, there's a denouement over the credits where we see the family having like a celebratory picnic or something.
Oh, but, that's true.
Well, and we see his father get into a fist fight just like he does. So,
let's talk about Ginger Meg's parents in this.
They're interesting.
Yeah. How do they compare to Fatty Finn's parents?
Let's see. The gimmick with them is that his mother, who looks like a photo negative of Mama Berenstain Bear, is always telling the father to go and whip the boy good, and the boy always manages to talk his way out of a spanking. And when the mother does think that he's being spanked, like she hears the whip or something, she's like, "No, no, please go easy on him." So there's it's this interesting look at how parents, I guess parents are sort of raised by their own parents to think that violence toward their children is natural, but there is an inclination to not do it, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
So clearly in Australia, they haven't read To Train Up a Child.
the parents, I think, are, it's interesting because like the dad, they are similar to Fatty Finn's parents. I think a this bit. Dad is less of a piece of shit.
Fatty Finn had a fat dad and a skinny mom, and Ginger has a fat mom and a skinny dad. And the dad has this Amish beard, which is really kind of distracting, especially when he wears the hat.
Yeah, I can't look at him and not think of, oh my God, I don't even know the character name. He's the guy in Godzilla's Revenge. The toy inventor next door looks just like him. So, this dad is like Fatty Finn's dad is kind of a layabout. He likes to skip work to go fishing, stuff like that. But
supposedly he's off work semi-permanently because of illness. But apparently he's been telling his wife that he's been going to work when he's actually going off fishing.
Yeah. So he's, you know, it's. There's a similar dynamic to the Fatty Finn dad, but this dad does seem to be a little more involved in actually trying to raise his kid. Like when he goes up to he's like, I'm going to go and teach Ginger Megs a lesson. And then Ginger Megs tells him the problem he has with the bully. And this dad just starts giving him like fatherly advice about how to kick a bully's ass.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, at least he's trying.
Yes.
And he gets really mad about Ginger Meg's going on that radio quiz show and winning a radio, which I'm not sure why he gets upset about that. But
yeah, he got it. I guess the boy was supposed to be doing something else because in both this and in Fatty Finn, the children are expected to basically busy themselves working in the yard when they're not in school. So that's their third space is the yard.
I guess it must be an Australian thing. They do have a lot of wide open spaces there, so.
Or probably the garden is probably what they actually call it.
Oh, yeah. So, This
movie is so fragmented and, you know, things just, you know, kind of come and go to the point where I think this might actually be derived from existing comic strips.
I would not put that past them.
And they introduce these characters that are there for like a second, like the farmer who tells them, yeah, I saw a monkey go by. Hey, stay out of my pasture. And then he's gone.
Oh, yeah. And like the neighbor that gets the dad seems to have some sort of rivalry with.
Yeah. And the most invisible character of all, Dudley.
Oh, the baby.
Yeah, they have a baby. And one thing I think is funny is that everyone talks about how Ginger Meggs is the Australian Peter Pan, 100 years, and he's never grown up. Yeah, but Dudley has grown up even less. He's been a baby for the last 100 years.
Yeah, he's like the Gasoline Alley baby in
the Mad Magazine. Do you think we'll ever get back to the point where we start naming babies Dudley again?
I feel like Dudley is one of those names that has, one character has ruined it for everyone. You know, kind of like Adolf.
Yeah. Nobody wants their baby to be associated with a developmentally disabled pink rabbit that appears on Easter products.
Yep. But the so I guess is that. Gosh, did we talk about everything that happened in Ginger Meggs?
I think we might have. We didn't talk about it in order, but you know, it doesn't need to happen in order. This movie is even more like a Christmas Story in that if you looped it for 24 hours, it would just sort of, you know, start and end with no actual, you know, denouement. It would just, you know, the movie that you can start watching whenever and stop watching whenever.
It's like the cut up technique from Naked Lunch, where they it's a book where you can open to any page and just read, you know.
What was the book? Oh, like Finnegan's Wake, where it ends in the middle of a sentence fragment with just the word "and."
Yep. Oh, there's one more thing that I think we should mention though.
Oh.
What's this? Not Eddie Coogan. The other rich kid, we mentioned him, Fitzy.
Fitzcoog, or what was his name?
Like Filbert, Fitzy, Cuthbert, something, whatever. Some snooty rich kid. I'm very confused about his role in the movie because he's a new kid in school. It seems that he has his sights on Min, or Min has her sights on him. So Ginger Meggs is kind of not happy about the fact that he's there, but then he shows up and buys Ginger Meggs some ice cream, and they seem, you know, and it's like, oh, I guess, are you friends? And then he seems to mostly disappear from the movie, except for being another snooty rich kid that the villainous rich kid can occasionally confide in. So,
what it reminds me of is Raul from UHF. And how there was supposed to be more to his story, but the actor died in a car accident.
Oh, geez.
He was supposed to show up at the end, but they didn't get to film that shot.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that's what happened.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully this kid did not die in a car accident.
Yeah, I hope so, too. You know, Cuthbert Fitzy Fitzclune. You know, I don't think he deserved that. He might have deserted a little more than Raul, but
yeah, he is. There's a third rich kid though, because there's this
rich kid who kind of looks like a young Otho.
Yes, that one. I don't think he's ever named. He's just another a rich kid who stands around and is annoying. At the drag party, like, he and Cuthbert are like, "This is so uncouth," as there's a food fight going on.
Yes.
But like, that's their main thing, is to be scandalized by stuff that happens. But I mean, you need a bunch of snooty rich kids. I get it. This is a snobs versus slobs kind of comedy, but
it's mostly just slobs versus other slobs, while snobs look on and go, "I say."
I mean, that's more accurate. I think that is a problem.
Which kind of sums up American politics in a lot of ways too.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, I think that these films, I think it would have been better if they made the rivalry between the, Eddie Coogan and, Ginger Meggs a little sharper, but, they do fine. Anyway, Ginger Meggs, it's a movie, it exists, it's got a good soundtrack, and it's slightly more interesting than Fatty Finn.
Yeah, it's slightly more interesting, but at the same time, I feel like, you know, I paid more attention to Fatty Finn, and this one I was like, oh yeah. Just kind of looking up from my phone every few minutes. And, you know, that neither of them really hold your attention, but I looked it up and it turns out you're right that Fatty Finn is available to watch on Tubi. So I have no idea how you got the link that you sent to me from archive.org.
Well, I mean, hey, we still got, the important thing is we watched it.
Yeah. It was a supportarchive.org.
Yes. So I guess, that is it for our Down Under Us Austravaganza.
Oh man, we should have called it that 4 episodes ago.
Well, if Australia has any other comic strips that have become movies, you'll have a chance to do it again. I don't know that they do. I think we've talked about every single Australian comic strip, both all one of them.
Well, let's just take a short plane ride and go somewhere a lot more interesting for our next episode. Stay tuned next week for special presentations Extrava Japanaganza.
Ooh, well, I'm certainly curious about what we're gonna see there.
I just dropped this on mic right now, so if we end up not doing it, I'm sorry.